Good morning, everybody. This is Just Life, live on Radio Maria. And I'm delighted to be joined this morning by Isabel Squirrel, who has come all the way to our studio in North London. Good morning, Isabel.
Morning. Thank you for having me.
Isabel, this is her third programme. 2 years ago, she came on Just Life and spoke about her work as a child psychotherapist. She's also spoken on Women Together. So she's an all-time friend of Radio Maria, and we're delighted to welcome her back this morning. Now, on the 2nd to the 8th of April, we celebrated Autism Awareness Week in this country, and Isabel kindly agreed to come and talk about this and to talk about autism. Autism is something that she comes across often in her work with children. Isabel is a UK CP registered child psychotherapist, also based like us in North London, and she works in private practice and in schools, caring for children and families, children from the age of 3 all the way up to 18. So thank you once again, Isabel, for coming to the studio to talk to the listeners about autism and also in relation to the Autism Awareness Week that we've just had. So,
yes.
Well, thank you. If you'd like to introduce yourself any further and also just give us an introduction to this subject, perhaps somebody listening doesn't know very much about autism at all.
Sure. Yeah, thank you for inviting me. I feel that I'm so particularly glad about that, because autism is a topic that I think isn't understood that well, and there's so much research, but there's also not enough research on it. And I'm regularly coming up against parents who feel like the information is confusing and unclear, often autistic people themselves who feel misrepresented because the people doing the research don't tend to have autism themselves. And so it's done by sort of what's called neurotypical brains, not brains where they may be on the spectrum. So there's kind of a difficulty of the outsider-insider experience. And I'm not someone who has autism myself, but I have worked with so many children who have a diagnosis or who maybe have presenting symptoms. And then I think that it's possible they have a diagnosis, and we might explore that together. So I think it's really important and great that it's been profiled in this way by Radio Maria. And I think especially in the church, maybe we don't talk about issues of what it's like to have different conditions. And I think it's so good that you are wanting to celebrate all kinds of people in their different ways of being, because autism is something that people are born with. It's something that is a neurodevelopmental condition. So you start to see the symptoms of it, but sometimes as young as 3 months, you can start to see things. But actually it doesn't often show up until a child is maybe 3, 4, when they kind of enter the school system, that's when it gets highlighted. So I might think a bit with you about what autism is. And there may be people, listeners, who you may be finding that you relate yourself, thinking, oh, I think I might have autism, or you do have autism, or someone you love does, someone who's close to you does, or your child, you may start to think, oh, are you wondering, is this your child? Or even as I speak, you may start to think, oh, it could be them. And I think it's worth really getting clued up and understanding more, because a diagnosis is so helpful. And I'm really for knowing that you, if it is you, going for that, actually, because the amount of self-understanding and validation that a diagnosis brings is so worth it. And it helps you also communicate with those around you, your needs, or your child's needs. And it helps teachers in schools. It's such a useful thing to go for. And so Autism Awareness Week was on the 2nd to the 8th of April. So I have an Instagram page where I share therapeutic information with parents. And it started because really so many parents were asking for sort of tips about things, and even parents in my personal life, not just in my work life, people wanted to know stuff. And I suppose there's so much out there, but it felt like a good way of giving kind of free information to parents. So if you're on Instagram, you should definitely give me a follow there, and you might find it interesting. But on that, I was kind of wanting to share during Autism Awareness Week about autism, because I hadn't really mentioned it before. And the stats are that it's about 1 in 100, they say, on the kind of since 2020, that's kind of the stats. But my experience and speaking with peers and colleagues of mine, child therapists, teachers in schools, I'm in many schools and I have been in many schools for many years, but also ed psychs, educational psychologists who often are brought in to schools, it's more anecdotally a third per class of children who seem to be autistic, whereas 1 in 100 seems like a totally false reading. But I don't know of any official statistics that show that, so this is just my anecdotal experience, but I feel that teachers are really seeing the increase in presentation. So I think it's important, because it can feel a lonely experience, and you can feel so different if your child may seem to have autism, or a child themselves may feel different. And actually, there are so many children that feel so like they may feel represented by this diagnosis, that one has to wonder, is it, how different is it really if it's a third? And actually, maybe there's something about, what does it even mean to be neurotypical when it's such a high proportion? And I think we're so much better at diagnosing now. That's one of the reasons why it seems to be increasing. But it's kind of hard to, for, there hasn't been enough research really as to the reasons for that. But in terms of what it is, so there are no causes as such. It's just more of a neurodevelopmental thing, so brain development. And so it's important not to persecute oneself as a parent if you're thinking, oh, what could I have done? But actually, I think we need to celebrate autism and think, what is it about the brain and autistic brains that have much to teach us? And there really is so much that an autistic person can bring. There's presenting features like being able to concentrate amazingly, having a kind of hyper attention, or when there's a special interest. So one of the main sort of presenting features and what it feels like to be an autistic person is that they will have a few special interests that may change over time, and they may really be different things, but they have traditionally, people have a stereotype slightly of things like trains or numbers, which can happen, but that often is the presenting special interest in boys. Actually, in girls, the interest can be things like flowers or animals or even TV programs. So it's very easy. You can see how an autistic diagnosis or an autistic person may get missed, because if your special interest is football or a popular TV show, that seems like the same thing as what every other child is talking about. But there's a kind of way in which a person feels so alive in talking about this, and that their interest is peaked so much higher than anybody else on that topic, but also that they may lose interest in other topics that are not about their special interests. So this is something that I think one of the most important ways of understanding autism is really thinking, like I said earlier, about what is the experience of someone who is autistic. And there's a great book called I Don't Look Autistic At All by Bianca something, and I'm sorry that I've forgotten her surname, but she's amazing for describing, she's kind of a young adult writing about discovering her autistic diagnosis, and she really expresses how frustrated she is by the list of symptoms that you look up on Google and how different it feels to be autistic. And some of the main things she highlights are this special interests thing, where she feels like you just know it, how excited you can be about something. And really, that's one of the reasons why autistic people gravitate towards one another, is that only other autistic people can understand how exciting this topic is. And if you find another autistic person with the same special interest, then you've really found a friend. And there's a way in which there's a sort of understanding together. But another real feature of autism is that there's a kind of sensory experience that's very different to what seems like other people. So the sensory overload can be felt as loud noises or very, very irritating lights, or noticing things, it seems, that others don't seem to notice. So being in crowds, being overwhelmed by lots of people, but also the opposite of also feeling like there can be a sort of avoidance of it, but there can also be a real enjoyment and fascination with the sensory experience too, that it feels that other people don't seem to even notice specific things around, and it can be felt as clothes having certain textures and only liking to wear certain things, or children, maybe it is often expressed with them them not wanting to wear socks, or finding the labels on their clothes really, really annoying and so disruptive to their day that they actually can't engage in lessons, for example. Or it could be felt that they really want to be on their own because there's a little ringing sound in the room next door. These kind of symptoms is what it feels like to be autistic there, where you feel this sensory difference. And those things are actually often highlighted less than what maybe a neurotypical person would identify as being autistic. But they're actually some of the main things that an autistic person feels.
Wonderful. Thank you, Isabel. Such a comprehensive introduction. I've had a quick look at the book you mentioned, and Bianca Toeps.
Yes.
It's not surprising that you didn't remember her surname. That's T-O-E-P-S, but you don't look autistic at all. So let's take a little music break. This is Precious from April Shipton.
Listen to a mother's heart speaking to the child she loves. You're so precious, darling, you are so precious to me. Precious to me.
Precious from April Shipton this morning. Just Life Live with Isabel Squirrel, a registered child psychotherapist, who's giving us such a fascinating and accessible introduction to autism. Thank you so much, Isabel, for sharing with us this morning. Back over to you.
Yes, well, I think when we talk about this, I find myself thinking about children that I've worked with, and though I wouldn't ever share publicly, or you know, the sessions are confidential, I think what I can say is that every autistic child I've worked with has had a real impact on me in our relationship, where I think the strengths of being autistic are that there can often be a feeling that they are full of wonder and can appreciate tiny details that I can overlook and that non-autistic people can overlook. And I just think that I feel so strongly that for those children that I have in my mind, where they sometimes feel very lonely and very misunderstood, and how I would love the world to be more autistic friendly, and for them not to feel so like people hear autism and sometimes they can imagine someone who's nonverbal, which it's a spectrum for a reason. So that is sometimes the presentation, and we have to really wonder to ourselves how much prejudice there exists even around nonverbal presentations in people, and that there is stigma attached, but that also for many autistic people they're high functioning, and that terminology is problematic really, because it does suggest that high and low functioning, I think that's a very limited way of expressing it, but that is the technical term, and that was once Asperger's, which also has horrible connotations because of its original context, was that Asperger himself was in Nazi Germany looking at idealized behaviors and examining a certain group of young people, but he did identify some patterns, but I don't want to attribute to him any more than I think that's why the name has changed. But I do think what's important is that is now considered under the autistic spectrum, and the spectrum is also, people sometimes say, oh, are we all on the spectrum? And actually this is something that isn't that helpful actually for those that are, because we may resonate with some traits, like of anything, where you may think, oh, I may also be someone who doesn't like loud noises. But I think that it's important to give space for an autistic person to have their space, and to acknowledge that we can try and understand, if we're not autistic, what it's like. And I've always welcoming conversations really with autistic people, so that we can get more of a sense, all of us, to make the world more friendly towards them. Because one of the challenges is that children can mask and adults can mask their autism. So high functioning autistic people can find especially school so tricky because of the loud noises, because of the kind of other people around. And actually they can then mask and then be absolutely exhausted at the end of a day and have huge meltdowns at home. And parents are often the ones picking up the pieces there. And masking has helpful on some level because it's how you fit in. Because so the main way in which autism is defined, I haven't said really, is that it's social communication difficulties. And I haven't highlighted that because that isn't the insider experience as much, but that's maybe how those around them may notice things, that they may struggle with picking up social cues, may misread social behavior, and then maybe say things in a way that doesn't sound quite the same as maybe someone who's neurotypical. And sometimes this is one of the hard bits, is autistic people can be misunderstood as maybe rude or defiant because they just don't say things in the same way that may seem sort of polite or social niceties. But actually, how refreshing to be around someone who challenges social norms. And why should we say things sometimes in the way that we do? And there's something very honest and very real about an autistic person who just is just expressing what they feel. And actually, that can be very refreshing. And I think these are some of the strengths of autism, that there is a challenging of the way society functions. And I think that's something that we want to, in a way, celebrate. But also, I think in terms of helping someone who has autism, or noticing if your child has these symptoms, you may be listening and thinking, oh, this really resonates. You know, they struggle a bit with social communication. They have these very sensory needs that I'm really picking up on, or sensory aversions. They hate this and they can't bear to be in these environments. Or they also have these special interests. And you may be thinking, oh, is this my child? And how can I help them? Like, how can I help them thrive? Because that's what we want for everybody, really, that they will thrive. And I think that thinking about, on one level, what an autistic child needs is what everyone needs, which is validation of their experience, where we may want to be curious about what it's like for them, to empathize how they feel, and to accept them as they are. These are the kind of fundamental needs that we all have, and that in a way an autistic child is no different. But that also it may be about helping an autistic person to feel that they can manage the social world that they live in. And particularly for children and teenagers who are forced to be in school, you know, as an adult, autistic adults may find themselves in jobs where they don't have to interact with so many people, or they can just do their special interests as a career. And this is how you can go quite easily into adulthood without maybe ever a diagnosis coming up, and you could thrive quite well. But actually, you may find, oh, as an adult, oh, I'm not fitting in the spaces that I'd like to be. But especially for children and teenagers who are forced to be in school, it's really important that they're helped to understand the social world that they're in. Because just like maths and English can be learnt, the kind of social stuff can be learnt too. And you can do things like social stories, where you may read about or talk about environments that children and young people are in, like in the playground or in sports, and try and make sense of emotions that and ordinary life things. And this is why having the strong relationship with your child is so important, so you keep talking together and just think about social skills, and but also the visual, visually showing things, not just auditory processing, but visually creating maybe pictures for feelings, or for watching videos about how people interact. These can really help an autistic mind to understand the social world. We may want to come to some music at some point, but I can also keep sharing about more things as well.
Yeah, let's take a short music break. This is Strong from Father Tansy.
Strong in me.
to save me. Oh, gentle love that's strong as death, be strong in me to save me. Be strong in me, be strong in me, be strong in me.
You're strong in me. Inspiring lyrics there from Father Tanzi, a Franciscan friar of the Renewal. This is Just Life with Isabel Squirrel. She's a child psychotherapist coming to talk to us about autism, as earlier in April, this country had National Autism Awareness Week. And a big thank you to Isabel for sharing her time with us this morning. And if you do have any questions for Isabel, write them down, because during the next music break we're going to be taking questions, and I'll let you know how to contact us when we get to that point. But for now, Isabel, back over to you. Thank you so much.
Yes, well, it's really meaningful, like I've said already, to sort of share about what autism is like and to kind of raise awareness really for how it sometimes people have an idea that it can mean that a person's really going to have such a different kind of life. But actually, what if that life could be really celebrated? And also, what if we could really learn from autistic people? I think one of the questions people might wonder about is, if my child has autism, or how do I sort of introduce them to this idea? And how do I talk about it with them? And before, this is sort of even pre going for a diagnosis. And I think what's really important is kind of talking with them about how everyone's brain is different. And sometimes it might be that they feel a bit different. And actually, most of the time, and the children that I've worked with, where I've picked up in their sessions, maybe an autistic presentation, like maybe they have very one-sided conversation, or maybe they really love talking about one thing in particular, or they might find transitions and change really hard, which is something I haven't mentioned really, but that's another big part of what it feels like to be autistic. So I may notice things, but actually most of the time a child already feels like they are a bit different. So they already feel something of this confusion, social confusion, or that school is just really hard, and they notice it. And they notice that they're having to work quite hard to sort of learn how to do things in a way that it feels like their friends maybe aren't. So it's likely that the child already feels something of this. So it's really possible to naturally bring up that there are kind of different brains, and maybe they could learn about this thing called autism and see if the child themselves feels like it resonates with them. And I think it's so important that children are brought into that diagnostic process themselves, that their voice is at the center. You know, if they really go, no, that's not me, like, I don't relate to that, then maybe it's worth just you learning more about how to support an autistic child. There's loads of kind of resources you can access online from the National Autistic Society, and even podcasts or people on social media who share these things. But it may be that it's not the right time for them to think about it, and it has to be in there is, I think it's important to respect actually their own journey, but it's also kind of making sure that they're not hidden from autism as well, and that there's nothing to kind of, we don't need to protect them from that, but it's something that they can come to in their own time if you gradually introduce them to the idea. And something that can be quite fun is this book called All Cats Have Autism, which, if they like cats, that's particularly helpful, where it goes through, it's a child-friendly book, which goes through each page has a different autistic trait and how cats actually seem to show so many autistic features. Like, they like to be hugged in their own terms, they like to be approached in their own terms, and they sometimes have sensory needs. They can also be quite risk-taking. There's all kinds of things that can relate to an autistic person, and it can be a really nice child-friendly way of talking about it together and thinking together. But if they hate cats, which I've definitely had children who hate cats, so then that book is a bit of a gets shut down quite quickly. You can try and think of, what is their special interest, and is there someone who's famous who's got autism who could be a role model? So Greta Thunberg is a famous environmentalist, obviously, and young person as well, that quite a lot of young people might relate to. If they're interested in the environment or geography or any kind of world things, you could link that to her. Or Elon Musk, so cars, Tesla, or tech, you know, there's so many, or business, there are so many. If those are the special interests, he's a great role model. And gosh, whatever people's opinions may be, what an amount he's contributed to the world. And actually, autistic people contribute so much. But then also there's footballer James McLean, who is plays for Wigan and the Republic of Ireland. And people often think Messi actually has autism as well, though he hasn't got an official diagnosis. So it's probably not, maybe he's not always the best person to think about. But there's been quite a lot online about him maybe having autism. And there's also Wentworth Miller, who's an actor, or Melanie Sykes, who's a presenter, TV presenter. But these are all people who I think one might not expect have autism. And it's important to kind of show examples of how you can lead a really functioning, successful life. And role models are just so useful. And I think even whether your child is on the spectrum or not, actually, I think looking at people who have something that they may want to emulate can be inspiring. And that's just such a important thing, really. In terms of pursuing the diagnosis, I would also, you kind of want to go through school, ideally, and talk with teachers about it. And there are SENCOs in schools, special educational needs coordinators, who are very familiar with autism. They see it all the time. And you can kind of go through the CAMHS, which is the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services. And then you can kind of apply for an assessment for a diagnosis that way. Be warned that waiting lists are super long. A year is standard in schools. And I think that's important because it shows how many children are kind of waiting for diagnosis or assessments, and how sort of normal this is, actually. And I think that's definitely a way, you know, knowing that other people are going through it is so important too. And you may want to try and find other autistic children, other autistic people for your child to speak with too, if you know people. But going through the school's route, and that is a free way of being diagnosed, but it's just a long one. And you can also go privately. Again, waiting lists are still a few months, and it is expensive. So that's always something to think about too. But I think it's worth just going down that road, trying to explore whether this would suit someone, because having a label can be limiting, because people then project what that means. And in anything, that's the case. But actually, it also can feel so validating because it explains and normalizes something which is already an experience that a person has of feeling like these set of symptoms or this set of presenting ways of being, they're kind of coming together under something. And then others have that too. And then someone can say, I'm autistic. And in the workplace as an adult, if you say that, people will be able to support you and people will understand what you need more. And owning our needs and asking for those around us to help us is so important. And it's not something that sometimes people can get worried. I've heard parents before say, oh, if they say they're autistic, you know, what will that be like? Will they be treated differently? But I think that actually we live in a world now, especially in the UK and in London, but in the UK in general, where people are more and more wanting to learn, and neurodiversity is even something that's being talked about. And under neurodiversity is also ADHD, dyslexia, dyspraxia. So there's so much willingness from people to try to understand. And I think the onus can't always be on the autistic people as well to educate. I think it's important that we all educate ourselves and try and understand what it's like. And if you have someone in maybe your team at work who says they're autistic, really, we all want to try and understand what that might be like. And I think sometimes thinking about what it's like for a child can help us understand what it's like for an adult, because we all have our child living inside us, and sometimes it helps us relate best to people. But I especially feel for children, because I think being in school and having to navigate the kind of social world that brings, and other children are not always very kind. And they just speak honestly, and they can. It's not an easy time. And if it's not actually for having the label that other children will find that difficult, it's more if a child is missing social cues and not understanding things, in the environment that they're in. It can just make them feel feel bad about themselves, really. And actually, that's one of the reasons why autistic children often come to therapy, or children who aren't diagnosed, but they kind of have some presenting features, is because sometimes they're not very happy. And actually, low self-esteem and mental health, other mental health issues like anxiety and depression and self-harm, these are actually really strongly correlated to having autism, because living with autism in this world isn't easy. And I think especially as a young person, it can feel really hard. And that's why everyone becoming more clued up about it just will make others feel better. And I think one child, you know, I think without disclosing, but what children I've worked with have expressed the feeling of how valuable they feel for coming to therapy, and how child therapy is, people may wonder, how does that help an autistic person? But it's, the sessions are about building relationship, playing together, about building self-esteem through being validated by a person who isn't mum and dad or school or a friend. It's a kind of professional, but another kind of person, and who attends to their feelings and really seeks to understand them. And it's really in being understood that we feel good about ourselves, and then we have more courage to share more of ourselves, become more vulnerable, and then we can be understood even more. So I think therapies, I can talk about therapy for ages, but I think we all would benefit from it.
Fascinating. Yeah, I'm sure certainly even I'm recognizing myself in some of that. And I'm sure if you're listening, perhaps you are too, or perhaps you know somebody. And if you have a question for Isabel, please do get in touch. This morning, we're not using the phone lines. We're going to use email. You can email the studio now on info@radiomariaengland.uk. That's info, I-N-F-O, at radiomariaengland.uk. Please do get in touch if you have a question or a comment for Isabel. We'd really love to hear from you. Let's listen to some music. This is My Own Dream from Sabine Rodiguez. I Have a Dream for Your Life, Sabine Rodiguez. This is Just Life with Isabel Squirrel. And we do have a question from the studio. It's from Tim. Tim, over to you. You're live.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Isabel, for such a great talk. Really interesting to listen to. I was a school teacher for some time, and I can kind of, this is just a comment to begin with. I can say that it is helpful to sort of bear these things in mind when being understanding towards students. I remember once having a student who I was describing some of the things that he had said to me to a friend of mine, and he said, "Oh, that sounds like he might be on the spectrum," as the phrase is often used. And the following day, he rushed into the classroom and asked me very sort of earnestly to set his clock, his watch, so that the seconds were exactly on the right time. And if I hadn't had that conversation the day before, I think I probably would have said, "Well, you know, I'm about to give a lesson right now." But it gave me the opportunity to actually help him with something which was probably really important to him, that I didn't think needed to be that important if I hadn't had that insight. So I think it is a good thing for us to bear in mind, even if it's not, you know, kind of properly diagnosed one way or another. But then I have a question sort of leading on from that, and that's, you know, when you have these concepts that kind of can bring a lot into account, like a lot of behavior that maybe we think of as being like not normal or not the usual way that you see things, there can also be the tendency to use it as an excuse for everything. And I think that there's, like, maybe you can speak about the danger of that. So, because I'm sure there's also the need to help people to learn how to interact better, but like, and not to use it as just like a blanket excuse for anything that's out of the ordinary. Does that make sense?
No, it totally does. I think, I mean, first of all, I would say that what a lovely example you bring about the clock. And I think that's the word, I didn't use this word earlier, but I think the word accommodations is something that autistic people can talk about, which is how do people make accommodations for them, mm-hmm. and can they ask for accommodations? And I suspect that that clock would have prevented them from engaging in the whole lesson.
Yeah.
And actually teachers can feel that way of like, oh, just get on with it, like it's not that important, but actually it can disrupt so much. Yeah. And then actually it doesn't take that long to kind of help with the clock maybe. So sometimes I think figuring out, and I suppose then your second question, well, your question about, it's almost like when to bring an accommodation, mm-hmm. and when does actually the autistic person go, I'm going to accommodate to the world I'm in.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
that kind of balance is, I suppose there isn't like a right or wrong or a clear line about where that falls. But I think you make such a good point, because I do know that sometimes parents can be very protective of their children and want their child to be like, oh, this environment isn't good for my child. Mm. And actually where it really shows up in quite a problematic way is there's this kind of new phenomenon a bit since COVID of emotionally based school avoidance, which is called EBSA now, which used to be more under school refusal, but now it's being seen differently as more of an anxiety problem, because school refusal has got a bit of an anger association. But this is really common actually in autistic children, where they just don't want to go to school because it's too hard for all the reasons I've said earlier. And actually parents then find it really difficult to get them to school, and then it can actually become that they're just not going to school. And I think this is something where the assisting children before they get to that point really of being able to manage environments, mm-hmm. is, and I think it's got to be gradual exposure. So gradual, if it's big loud noises are a lot, then I think it's just saying, we're going to go, let's do 10 minutes today, or let's do even 5 minutes today, and then build up capacity. Because I think that it has to be that we want them to thrive. We want everyone to thrive. And the world isn't made for autistic people, sadly. So we don't want that children grow up and then they can't function properly. And so what you say about the excuse thing is, I think there's a risk that there's a kind of avoidance which can happen. And there's an excuse given, but actually there has to be a sort of gradual exposure. But I also think we have to be sensitive to that it's not easy.
If I can just carry on with that, I'm thinking about, you know, sometimes you have people who have like really not just strange behavior, but maybe mean behavior, you know, like, and then you find out that they have this or that kind of condition, you know, not necessarily the one we're talking about today. And then it can help you understand that. But then I think there's the temptation to just, like when it becomes a moral issue, to explain everything underneath the same blanket. And I think like from a Christian perspective, we should probably be careful not to cross that line.
True. I think that's true. And I suppose I think it's still important to, and this is where I think autism is tricky, because there is a misunderstanding of social behavior. So so often they can come across unempathetic and say things, but actually they do. It's not just going, oh, they're autistic, but actually going, okay, let's imagine what it was like for the other person.
Yeah.
And I do something in sessions where I draw a picture with thought bubble of what, imagining what the other person might be thinking. And often these things are total revelations to an autistic person, where they're like, oh, I didn't know that that would make them feel this way. And they don't want to hurt people. So actually trying to just be like, oh, maybe if you said it like this, it could create, you know, and it's actually giving tools rather than just. And so I think acknowledging it is important, but then it can't just stay at being like, oh, I'm autistic, full stop.
It's got to be, that's really helpful.
You know, giving tools, I think. Yeah.
Thank you, Tim, for your question. We've had a question sent in via WhatsApp. How can our parish be more inclusive for children with autism?
Oh, such a good, I thought here about what is it like for churches? It's so true. And I think that the services in some ways, you know, a kind of traditional church service is such a space for, because it is often actually quite easy to be anonymous there. And I think autistic and the repetition of the rituals may be quite soothing. And so I think there are aspects of church which are quite autism friendly, actually, because it's a predictable space every week that follows a similar format. But I think for children, especially, who may find the sitting for a long time in an environment more, I think the children's work space is really important, actually. Sunday schools and probably Sunday school teachers are often not given loads of tools and equipment to think about this. So I think it's the role of the leaders, I think all of us and the lay people, to kind of educate ourselves on what could help and to understand, so that if a child does say something like that about the clock or this is really loud, that we don't just dismiss, I think, but we try and show understanding and maybe facilitate. But I also think keeping boundaries is very important, you know, making sure things don't get too chaotic in Sunday schools. I help in my Sunday school in the local church, and sometimes it is very chaotic, and I've actually thought maybe it's not that easy for autistic children, actually, when we can be so soft on wanting to make it a really fun space, but actually keeping it very structured is very, very important. And I think allowing autistic people to have breaks from spaces, what to leave the room, like if they need to, and it just being fine if they need that. And also that we can all try and be kind of encourage children in Sunday school spaces, I'm thinking of, to really validate and understand one another. I think almost autism invites us all to be better people.
Thank you. Yeah, we've had another comment sent in along those lines. At our parish, we've made our children's liturgy more inclusive by really thinking about what instruments we use and choosing specific fabrics for the children's mats. But also the leaders have taken a short workshop on inclusion, which has really helped. So
amazing.
Thank you for those comments. We're coming to the end. I think I've got questions myself. I'll have to save them for another time. And I do hope that you'll be back to talk more about your work with children. But have you got any final comments for today, Isabel?
Yeah, I think I just want to say that, I suppose, given thinking about Radio Maria and how this is a place and a community of people who are seeking to love God and to love one another. And I think that we can trust that autism is something that God is really aware of, and maybe God has also got an autistic part of him too. And I feel like maybe we should just celebrate and see that all humans are valuable. And I just want to send that message strongly, that we just want to understand each other better.
Amen. How beautiful. Thank you so much, Isabel.
This was a Radio Maria podcast. If you enjoyed it, do please click like and subscribe on your podcast provider, or leave us a review. Every bit of feedback helps increase our visibility and allows us to reach more people with the message of Christ's saving truth. And if you don't already, you can listen to Radio Maria live, either online or on DAB in selected regions of the UK. We'd love for you to call in live and be part of the conversation. See our website, radiomariaengland.uk, for more details and a full schedule of programmes. And do please consider making a donation so that we can keep making more programmes like this. We are completely dependent upon the generosity of our listeners.